Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
All right. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You were just before we hit record here, you were talking about that you were working with a client on kind of laying out a plan for them, a reliability plan. I love the way you phrased it. It was, you know, we want to do X and we want to step it out this way. Here's milestones. I think it was, I'm putting words in your mouth, but here's looking out over the next few years. Here's ways to get to your overall end goal. But it didn't sound like it was, and first do this. It wasn't a project plan of how to achieve it. It was a set of goals. But it was a little more complicated than that.
Oh, yeah. I've always thought in doing a reliability plan or any type of planning, it's good to have a sequencing. But we have this resource that's just such a great resource in our toolkit called the Reliability Maturity Matrix.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah. And so recently I've been aligning the reliability plan tasks to the maturity matrix in the following way. Let me describe it and then I'd love to chat about it. Let's say we have a general target to, you want to develop and implement accelerated life testing. We'll say that, you know, I'm making this up right now as a larger target.
Okay.
And let's say the company, or internally in the listener's company, they don't do a good job on accelerated life testing. So it comes up in the gap analysis. So that really kind of highlights it that we want to do a much better job on accelerated life testing. That comes up from gaps. Well, what do we do? So we just say implement accelerated life testing? That's too general. What I like to do is align it to the reliability and maturity matrix. And so what I've been doing is saying for year one, depending on where you are in the maturity matrix, here are the tasks. So task one, task two, task three in year one is appropriate for where the company is on the maturity matrix. And then in year two, in theory, and I sure hope in practice, you've moved up the maturity matrix. So year two, you can take on a bit more challenge in terms of implementing the accelerated life testing. And so you lay out task one, task two, task three for year two. Or you could do year 2-3. In other words, lump them together. And then you could go year 3-5 or year 3, depending on how discreet you want to be. Hopefully during year two, you've moved up in the maturity matrix. Now we can do more modeling and more advanced work and whatever's appropriate for the next stage of the maturity matrix. So I've been doing this and very successfully and really like that approach and with good feedback from clients. And I wanted to share that with you, see your thoughts, and then kind of talk it over a bit, see how we might apply that in a more general sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all kinds of thoughts. I'm scribbling madly here. I know that whenever I've made recommendations, whether on a reliability plan or in consulting in general, or even when I'm working as a reliability engineer with an organization, it has to match their capability. They're, you know, going to somebody and saying, oh, you need to consider and derive all of the quantum interactions for your product with the environment. You know, unless you're talking to a high-end physicist organization, it's probably not going to happen, and it's probably not useful. So,
right?
I think there's two criteria to making recommendations, and when you're hitting on the one, is the recommendation something they can actually go do? And so, considering what their capability is. And so it ties into another thought I had, though, as you're talking, is that, well, if they're already doing a good job, right, and they're doing proactive things, they're doing design for reliability work, they're working with their suppliers to get stable processes, they're taking a good number of proactive steps. And so that would be indicative of a higher maturity in their overall program. And that would be tougher to lay out 3 years, right? Yet we have the advantage of it as you get closer to a very stable, robust, resilient program, it also gets more and more technical. It's probably the right word.
Yeah.
But it ties to not so much knowing the technique. I think anybody can go learn how to do an accelerated life test and go do the mechanics of doing that. I think that's for a lower maturity organization, it's learn the terminology and the techniques and have the skill sets to analyze the data and make measurements and so on. But as you get more and more mature, then it's, well, how and when do you choose to use this tool? How and when do you interpret this? How do you, you know, look ahead far enough that it's well budgeted and thought through, maybe even taking offline. Say you're exploring a new material or a new type of solution, taking that offline and investing in characterizing it versus develop it simultaneously with figure out whether it's going to work or not, which too many people do. So I think the approach works great when a company is going, yeah, we know we need to understand if this is going to work or not in the field before we launch it. So accelerated life testing is, yeah, that sounds like the right idea, and they don't know much more about it. That would be easy to write a 3-year plan for and take them right through it. But telling them, oh, go do ALT, they might not even know what the 3-letter acronym stands for.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a great believer in breaking down targets into sub-targets that are doable. I've seen reliability plans that say implement accelerated life testing, mm-hmm. and that's too general, in my opinion.
I've seen that a few times, and they go, all right, no problem. We'll go buy a chamber.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
You want to get down the detail of who does what and when. And so maybe you'll send something for training. Maybe you'll revise a certain test. Maybe you'll do some consultation about certain models. Those are, I'll call them subtasks that are the right, in my opinion, the right level of detail. You might have to consider certain changes to vibration inputs. Whatever is the level of detail that moves you to the next step. I also wanted to comment that I have a lot of thoughts going through my head. The gap analysis has both method gaps and capability gaps. Mm-hmm. And if you do it right, you'll not only get the gaps to help write your reliability plan, those gaps will also inform where the company is on the reliability maturity matrix, which is more the capability side. Mm-hmm. And so all of this assumes, and this is a whole separate subject of doing a gap analysis, getting a proper gap analysis is where you're going to get the maturity of the company, as well as what areas of challenge or gaps there are that from a method standpoint. So if we've decided ALT is a gap from a method standpoint, then we need to say, where are you today? And it would probably be odd that a company would have a big gap in accelerated life testing, but be in stage 4 or 5 of the reliability maturity matrix. And so chances are those will tend to align a little bit, where you'll be lower on the maturity matrix and a big gap from a method standpoint. Those are some thoughts off the top of my head.
Yeah. On that last comment, you know, is that I don't think it's it's a linear relationship or a prerequisite that you understand all of the various tools available to you to be a proactive organization. I think the stage four or five, the more mature companies, tend to ask the right questions. They tend to pay attention to the decisions they're making. And it's very, very likely, and I agree with you, that it does correlate that more mature organizations tend to know the difference between HALT and ALT and when and why to use them. Now, they may know about ALT, but have never really run into a meaningful set of reasons to use it. They may understand it and go, well, you know, we're doing fine with what we're doing, and we haven't seen the need for that. And then I'm just saying hypothetically here, is that then the company says, all right, well, we want to make, instead of a one-year product and or a three-year product or a five-year product in our consumer market, we want to make a product that goes for 20 years. Now they have a business reason to understand, will it last for 20 years or not?
Right.
I think then they would, and this extrapolates to all the various reliability tools, right? Some organizations have a product that is available. It's repairable and it has to be very highly available. Think of telecommunication equipment, right? In a system so that you always get a dial tone. They don't really pay that much attention to reliability other than how it plays into availability, right?
Right.
And so it'll be cost of maintenance and how often they have to repair things, replace things, but their driving mechanism is availability. Now, those organizations will pay attention to Markov modeling and Petri nets and more advanced tools that are pertinent to that type of technology, that type of product. Other companies will be really, really good at material science, but they may have never used HALT testing. So I think it varies dramatically depending on the technology and the company. It's to me, what you're doing is aligning their ability to come up to speed with this particular recommendation simultaneously with improving their culture around their organization of how and why they use those tools.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's the idea. And I don't think it needs I don't think all targets need a year one, year two, year three. I think the idea is to break it down where it's appropriate. In other words, if it's a longer vision, I think you have to ask, in this example of ALT or FMEA or reliability requirements or any of the methods that you're implementing, what's the time horizon? Mm-hmm. Where do you want to be in 5 years? And in some cases, you might get there in 2 years. Well, that's fine. So you break the targets down year one, year two. Mm-hmm. In other cases, it might take a full 5 years to get there.
There's more work to do, and there's a bigger gap in the overall culture. It takes longer.
Yes.
It definitely does.
Yep. Now, and I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, now, what do you do? Oh, I just lost the train of thought, but it was in setting the goals and setting the achievements of it and breaking down those tasks. And I'll go back to the ALT example. Now, in 3 years, if you're moving a company from, say, a stage two where they're familiar with ALT, but they don't really use it very well, and they know they need to improve that. So maybe a three-year goal makes sense. A three-year or five-year timeline really does make sense. How much of that more advanced thinking of a highly mature organization do you start introducing in year one?
Oh, yeah, that's probably not a whole lot, but you might introduce it. Let's see if we can get specific. Let's say that in year three, you want to be much better at modeling. And so maybe specific models like you were talking about, depending on availability or reliability, will you have different models. And so you want to have a high degree of expertise, say, by year three. Well, you might have to hire someone in year one that's going to begin that research capability, or maybe year two. So there's lead times to get whatever capability you want to have. And so, yes, I think that those lead times, you wouldn't just say in year three, let's implement the modeling, because there might be some things you have to do in year one and year two to get ducks in a row and to get set up to where you can begin doing that research.
Right. Well, you need somebody in the organization that's going to allocate those resources and understand where they're heading to. And that's generally that more mature, more proactive type of stance. And so that's why I'm asking is how much does the organization need to understand the nuances of where they're going, so that as they bring in statisticians or they bring on a equipment or failure analysis tools or whatever, that it aligns with where they're going? Because you can set up a great ALT lab and crank out all kinds of tests that nobody can use, right?
Yeah. So I think there's a prerequisite here, and that's probably something we need to think about and talk about more, which is you have to be a champion, or you have to have a champion somewhere that communicates the big picture to management, mm-hmm. and keeps them in line. Dear management, here's where we're headed. Here's why we're headed there, and make sure there's buy-in and agreement. Sometimes that happens top down. Oftentimes you have to nurture it, mm-hmm. and work with the management to get them to see where they need to be. But that's an essential ingredient that you're describing, is the vision. We call it, in our book, we talk about the reliability strategic vision. Where are you headed? Communicate it in a way so that management understands it. And that, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's probably stepping back from saying, you know, improve your ALT program as a very tactical objective, right? And because I step back from that right away as there's a gap. Right now, we don't have the information from an ALT that's properly done in order to make a better decision. Is this product ready to ship or not, for example, right?
Yeah.
And you're laying out, well, you need to get better at it. It does take time to build that capability. But I think in and along with that, and it may be assumed, is that this is to improve your decision-making so that you can get better at doing, using this tool, using this information. And it's part of the gap. ALT solves a problem. It's not something we just do because we can.
That's a really important point to make, is that everything we're talking about here, and I'm speaking to listeners here, is everything Fred and I are talking about presupposes that we've done a gap analysis, because we don't advocate a one-size-fits-all reliability plan. We don't say you always do this or always do that. You always want to start with a gap analysis. So I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah. Well, even FMEA, Carl, do you regularly recommend FMEA? Have you ever not recommended it?
Oh, sure. I've not recommended FMEA in certain circumstances. Because FMEA should occur, this is a little side excursion, but FMEA should occur where you have a certain degree of risk. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a ballpoint pen manufacturer, and it's essentially the same ballpoint pen, but you're going to, you're on a project that relates to improving something.
Yeah, the new and improved packaging with the words new and improved on it.
Yes, exactly. So marketing effort won't necessarily require an FMEA. I usually end up with a system FMEA if it's a complex system, mm-hmm. even if the change is somewhere down in the system because of the interfaces and the interactions. But I'm very hesitant to recommend FMEAs on all the parts of the system hierarchy. And so going to the bicycle, if you change the brake pad, you might have to do an update to your handbrake FMEA, but you're going to focus more on the brake pad, mm-hmm. because that's where the change is. But then there's interfaces that it affects. So I try to look at it. I try to approach nothing with one size fits all, where you always do something. Usually there's an FMEA involved somewhere. Mm-hmm. Usually there's good reliability requirements involved somewhere.
Not so much. You must have different clients than I do. When you first walk in the door.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it that way. Let me clarify.
You should.
I should. What I meant was usually a good reliability plan includes reliability requirements.
Yeah.
Very definitely, they're not good necessarily when you walk in the door.
No. But let's go back to the idea of if the listener, if you're thinking, oh yeah, we need to get better at ALT, and then that gap assessment, and what we're talking about is that, well, if you don't really have regression analysis capability, you don't have the tools, you've never done an accelerated life test before, nobody in the organization's interpreted those results before, well, there's some work to do just to get the capability in place. It's definitely not go get a high temperature chamber and throw it in there for 500 hours and try to interpret the results. It might be the right solution. It might be absolute waste of time. You got to understand, without getting into details of ALT, there's all kinds of other elements to understand and get there. And I think what you're talking about, Carl, is that in an assessment of an organization, they say, right, we need to make better decisions on the lung. Is our product going to be reliable enough at 5 years or 10 years or something like that? Well, ALT is a good tool for that. Let's get better at that. And then it's matched to what are they able to do today? What can they build on? What capabilities do they need to build? And lay it out in a discrete way to solve that. I think the key point here is that it's in context with that it's not set up a checklist thing. You don't set up to be a stage two company in maturity. That might be where you are, yet the recommendations are always towards that I, in my opinion, towards becoming a stage four or five, that you understand the tool, the techniques, when and why to use it, how to interpret it for making decisions, because that's what gets you to those upper stages of maturity, not just a checklist of, well, we do lots of ALT. That's not helpful.
Absolutely right. And so if the listeners can get this vision in mind that we're going to develop, you should have a good reliability plan. If you have a new project, a reliability plan is appropriate. Mm-hmm. And to do that, we want to get the gap assessment done. And that gap assessment is going to tell you where the company is on the maturity matrix. Then use that information. And that's really the discussion topic here, is use that information to inform your tasks. Mm-hmm. So that we go, if we're going to implement FMEA, year one, you might be doing certain things based on your maturity matrix. Year two, you hopefully advance up the maturity matrix. And I completely agree. You want to move towards that stage four, stage five. And by the way, we'll post a fresh copy of maturity matrix in the show notes so people understand what we mean by stage four and stage five.
Yeah.
But yeah, you want to have that goal. So really you're doing two things. You're improving the methods capability, and you're also improving the general maturity from a reliability standpoint of the company.
That's right. That's right. Well said. All right. Well, I feel like we could talk about this for about 3 days.
Yes, indeed.
So we should wrap it up a little bit. But it's one of those where, you know, if this makes sense to you as a listener, you know, let us know. And I think what do you see as the traps, right? If you're making recommendations to an organization, or you're working as a reliability engineer and you see a gap and you need to address that or fill it, what are those barriers to that, right? Part of setting good objectives and steps to achieve it is understanding where the landmines are, where the barriers are, where the trouble spots are going to be. And how do you go about doing that, right? And it's probably a setup, Carl, for another discussion on gap analysis. But I'd like to hear where our listeners, you know, are struggling with this.
Very good. Yeah, you're right. That's a good setup for another topic.
All right. So as you're listening to this, hopefully you can take a note or two. We got one comment a couple weeks ago, Carl, that he said, I had to pull over and write down a note so I wouldn't forget.
I'm glad they pulled over.
Yeah, me too. And we've had a, so we know you may be listening in your commute or in a drive or while doing something else and not in front of your computer, which is perfectly fine. We appreciate you taking time to listen. But when you get a chance, we'd love to hear from you. So go over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, or you can get in touch with us through LinkedIn or Facebook or, well, I don't know so much about Facebook, but LinkedIn and email. You can find out how to contact us on the site also under our About pages. But we look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see what kind of comments we get, and that may really inform our next discussion, Carl, on when we get around to talking about gap analysis.
Sounds great, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.